You have only to look at our own solar system, or come to that, Earth, at certain periods in its own history, to appreciate that most places are much harsher and much less amenable to life than our mild, blue, watery globe. So far, space scientists have discovered about 70 planets outside the solar system, out of the 10 billion trillion or so that are thought to be out there. So humans can hardly claim to speak with authority on the matter, but it appears that if you wish to have a planet suitable for life, you have to be just awfully lucky. And the more advanced the life, the luckier you have to be. Various observers have identified about 24 particularly helpful breaks we have had on Earth. But this is a flying survey, so we'll distill them down to the principal four. They are excellent location. We are, to an almost uncanny degree, the right distance from the right sort of star, one that is big enough to radiate lots of energy, but not so big as to burn itself out swiftly. It is a curiosity of physics that the larger a star, the more rapidly it burns. Had our sun been 10 times as massive, it would have exhausted itself after 10 million years instead of 10 billion, and we wouldn't be here now. We are also fortunate to orbit where we do. Too much nearer, and everything on Earth would have boiled away. Too much farther away, and everything would have frozen. In 1978, an astrophysicist named Michael Hart made some calculations and concluded that Earth would have been uninhabitable had it been just 1% farther from, or 5% closer to, the Sun. That's not much. And in fact, it wasn't enough. The figures have since been refined and made a little more generous. 5% nearer and 15% farther are thought to be more accurate assessments for our zone of habitability, but that is still a narrow belt. The discovery of extremophiles in the boiling mud pots of Yellowstone and similar organisms found elsewhere made scientists realize that actually life of a type could range much farther than that, even perhaps beneath the icy skin of Pluto. What we're talking about here are the conditions that would produce reasonably complex surface creatures. To appreciate just how narrow, you have only to look at Venus. Venus is only 25 million miles closer to the Sun than we are. The Sun's warmth reaches it just 2 minutes before it touches us. In size and composition, Venus is very like Earth, but the small difference in orbital distance made all the difference to how it turned out. It appears that during the early years of the solar system, Venus was only slightly warmer than Earth, and probably had oceans. But those few degrees of extra warmth meant that Venus could not hold on to its surface water, with disastrous consequences for its climate. As its water evaporated, the hydrogen atoms escaped into space, and the oxygen atoms combined with carbon to form a dense atmosphere of the greenhouse gas CO2. Venus became stifling. Although people of my age will recall a time when astronomers hoped that Venus might harbor life beneath its padded clouds, possibly even a kind of tropical verdure, we now know that it is much too fierce an environment for any kind of life that we can reasonably conceive of. Its surface temperature is a roasting 470 degrees centigrade, roughly 900 degrees Fahrenheit, which is hot enough to melt lead. And the atmospheric pressure at the surface is 90 times that of Earth, or more than any human body could withstand. We lack the technology to make suits or even spaceships that would allow us to visit. Our knowledge of Venus's surface is based on distant radar imagery and some startled squawks from an unmanned Soviet probe that was dropped hopefully into the clouds in 1972 and functioned for barely an hour before permanently shutting down. So that's what happens when you move 2 light minutes closer to the Sun. Travel farther out, and the problem becomes not heat, but cold, as Mars frigidly attests. It, too, was once a much more congenial place, but couldn't retain a usable atmosphere and turned into a frozen waste. But just being the right distance from the Sun cannot be the whole story, for otherwise the Moon would be forested and fair, which patently it is not. For that, you need to have the right kind of planet. I don't imagine even many geophysicists, when asked to count their blessings, would include living on a planet with a molten interior, but it's a pretty near certainty that without all that magma swirling around beneath us, we wouldn't be here now. Apart from much else, our lively interior created the outgassing that helped to build an atmosphere and provided us with a magnetic field that shields us from cosmic radiation. It also gave us plate tectonics, which continually renews and rumples the Earth. If Earth were perfectly smooth, it would be covered everywhere with water to a depth of 4 kilometers. There might be life in that lonesome ocean, but there certainly wouldn't be baseball. In addition to having a beneficial interior, we also have the right elements in the correct proportions. In the most literal way, we are made of the right stuff. This is so crucial to our well-being that we are going to discuss it more fully in a minute, but first we need to consider the two remaining factors, beginning with another one that is often overlooked. We're a twin planet. Not many of us normally think of the Moon as a companion planet, but that is in effect what it is. Most moons are tiny in relation to their master planet. The Martian satellites of Phobos and Deimos, for instance, are only about 10 kilometers in diameter. Our moon, however, is more than a quarter the diameter of the Earth, which makes ours the only planet in the solar system with a sizable moon in comparison to itself. Except Pluto, which doesn't really count because Pluto is itself so small. And what a difference that makes to us. Without the moon's steadying influence, the Earth would wobble like a dying top, with goodness knows what consequences for climate and weather. The moon's steady gravitational influence keeps the Earth spinning at the right speed and angle to provide the sort of stability necessary for the long and successful development of life. This won't go on forever. The moon is slipping from our grasp at a rate of about 1.5 inches a year. In another 2 billion years, it will have receded so far that it won't keep us steady, and we will have to come up with some other solution. But in the meantime, you should think of it as much more than just a pleasant feature in the night sky. For a long time, astronomers assumed that the Moon and Earth either formed together, or that the Earth captured the Moon as it drifted by. We now believe, as you will recall from an earlier chapter, that about 4.5 billion years ago, a Mars-sized object